After stepping aside for the NBA trade deadline yesterday, it's the Real Kipper and Bourne Show back on Friday, which also means one thing. It's off the rails.
That's good.
Two general managers on Friday will join us, Gord Stellick in about half an hour, and then Doug McClain will pick up at the top of the hour.
I'd say that's the most Real Kipper and Bourne.
Friend of the show Friday.
Yeah, these are our pals.
Yeah.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and James Wilson.
Or Jimmy Willie.
Wilson! Wilson!
Is that a Castaway reference?
Excellent movie. Underrated, I feel like. Very good.
You know, this is going to sound messed up. I know all the pop culture things about it. I don't think I've ever really seen it.
Oh, it's excellent. Yeah. Especially
the part where he's screaming Wilson.
Whoa, spoilers.
The 20-year joke.
And it just pulled on your...
Oh, yeah.
Common sense string to slap Tom Hanks in the side of the head and go, it's a volleyball.
With blood on it.
Sounds like he was in deep, guys.
No, it's a very good movie. Anyways.
Sammy.
Yes.
Okay. I forgot on Wednesday to tell all our watchers and listeners that we were not on Thursday for this NBA trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And I want you to tell everybody whether or not it was worth it. Or not.
What do you mean? Oh, for the Raptors?
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
What happened?
I don't know who plays the Raptors. Like, I really don't. I went into yesterday kind of knowing, but they've been trading guys that I love with Pascal going out the door, OG going out the door.
Barnes and Quickley and Barrett and Grady Dick.
It's a whole new thing.
Yeah.
It's really a whole new thing. They traded another first-round pick to get, like, a young toolsy guy from Utah that I don't know how to pronounce his name. They got another Canadian, Kelly Olynyk. They traded away Dennis Schroeder for nothing, which I thought was weird because you need some leadership.
They got back Dinwiddie and then they waived Dinwiddie to save the money.
Saving some money, but you need some leadership on a team. I thought it was kind of an underwhelming trade deadline. If that trade deadline's like that in the NHL, we're not going to have much to talk about.
Well, we're glad we're back in whatever platform you choose. Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus from 4 to 6 Eastern, Spotify, YouTube channel now. We're glad you're with us for the next 2 hours. And also, text us at 590-590.
Do text us today. We've actually blocked off a little bit more time than usual to answer your text.
Because we get to them at like 5:46 every time.
Yeah, and then we're like,
text.
I love a day off as much as anyone out there, but here's the real issue.
Mm-mm.
You're going to have to remind me what the heck happened Wednesday night, because it feels like 100 years ago that we watched the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Dallas Stars. Usually I give it a window of 12 to 14 hours where I can absorb all of the details of the game.
Yeah.
But I'm way past that.
Well, here, you're not going to believe this, but their best player scored and no one else, and their goalie wasn't very good.
Okay.
Actually,
So wash, rinse, and repeat.
Yeah. I actually do think that it was a bit of the McCabe game.
It was the McCabe game.
And I think it was like a moment with this fan base where people didn't like McCabe. I think, you know, people are still kind of getting to know him. He hasn't been here that long, under a year. And I think people, with the addition of Benoit to that pairing, people really fell in love. Like, they've been loving Benoit, but those two together, with him running around, trying to fight Marchman, getting cut, spitting mad, blood running down his face. I feel like it was a bit of a turning point for McCabe.
I tweeted, I wonder if Jake McCabe is moving up the fan power ranking list, and commented on the game. That tweet has 572 likes and 62 people responded about how Jake McCabe is like one of the most beloved guys right now for people. It's the passion that unites us all.
No, it's Leaf fans are starving.
It's a Ritz cracker.
Starving.
Starving man.
For a guy with a little blood on his face.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yes, and he's that guy. He was genuinely mad, and he genuinely wanted to fight that guy who wouldn't fight him, so he chased him around. He ran him over.
But can he genuinely do it a little more often?
I think he does it a lot, Kipper.
I think if other people did it, it wouldn't feel like it had to be him every night.
No. Not like that.
Yeah.
Come on.
But who can do it like that every night?
I'm not saying that he needs to be bleeding, but I don't see enough of that out of him to draw that type of emotion. And that's the difference between him being okay to good to being great for the Leafs. Like, I'm not,
yeah,
I'm not going back 25 years.
No, but it feels like a pretty weird quibble to be like, how good was he? Why isn't every night? Every time someone fights, listen, Matthew Nyes fights. Why isn't it every night?
Don't need fighting. Just need a challenge. He challenged Marchment. It was a confrontation. It was eye to eye, nose to nose. No, they didn't fight, but they didn't have to fight, Sammy or JB.
Yeah.
They didn't. But you want to turn yourself into a beloved guy like you're talking about Wednesday night?
Yeah.
Like, how many games, how many true games do you remember Wendell Clark going where he didn't bring that type of emotion to a game? And I know it was 20 years ago. I get all of that. But if McCabe wants to be beloved like you're talking about as of Wednesday night,
yeah,
buddy, hey, just but a little more often.
I think we remember sort of, you remember the moments it happened with Wendell. You don't remember the games that didn't happen. And I think that, yeah, to your point, we could use these games where it happens for McCabe. So you look back and say, God, there was five or six times this year where he went off the rails and, you know, you're talking about his wires crossed a little bit.
He is, there's not many guys.
Loved him.
He's like a top 10 in the league. For wires crossed,
starts
guys.
But you know what? What goes with that is the moments in playoffs last year where all three times he ran a guy over, I think he got scored on within 40 seconds because he's just fritzing.
Yeah.
You know, so can you, you know, keep playing?
But sometimes he wants to stay a little bit in his quiet zone, and that's when it gets kind of quiet for the whole team. You need, it'd be nice if they had two guys like that or three guys like that that can kind of carry a little bit of that emotion for 17 other guys who just want to go through their the thing that they do on the ice.
That's why this Benoit pairing with them, I think, what was it our boy on Twitter was calling them, the roofers from North Bay?
Yeah,
they look like a couple of roofers.
Yeah, the Oak Leafs.
You know, they do. They if they're a pair, there's something to like there. It's also a really good artist. Go ahead.
No, I was just something about them that I do think they play too much still.
Well, like if Benoit played 23 minutes.
And then I don't think that's going to be the norm. I think that if you could slot them in as like your third pairing, 14 to 15 minute kind of group, where you could add two guys to this decor, which is a lot. But if you take out Gio and Liljegren and add in two capable NHL defensemen, sliding them down, they'd be even better because they'd be playing more on edge looking for people.
Okay, now it's like, you know, 20 other teams could say the same thing right now. If you just add two more top four and slide them back, kidding.
But we've been having this conversation with the Leafs trying to add guys for 5 years, and it's like maybe they should do it. And these two guys look like they could be a capable pairing, but it's maybe not playing 23 a night for Benoit. And like
Benoit's
that's crazy.
Just slid right in there as a top 4D on the Toronto Maple Leafs right now.
It's funny, there's a good article on, I think it was in The Athletic, on Benoit and his, like, shot, his, like, goals against stuff is, like, the best in the NHL. He's top 10 in goals, you know, suppressing goals, suppressing shots, suppressing everything. However, he's also bottom 10 in everything offensive, like, in terms of creating, whatever. He's the lowest event guy in the league, essentially. Like, nothing happens either way when he's on the ice, which is, the Leafs don't have a ton of guys like that, which is why he has value to them.
That's good.
Okay, let's go to our first Kippers Clipper on this Off the Rails Friday on Sheldon Keefe commenting on Jake McCabe.
Jake is an absolute competitor. So for him in that moment to not lose his cool and not lose his cool the remainder of the game, which I thought there was some confrontation between he and Marchment in the third period. Jake was hard on him, but our team was hard on Marchment the rest of the way. Jake asked him for a fight, and the fight didn't happen, obviously. But it's like that Jake didn't keep his or kept his cool and didn't hurt the team. And I mean, I think as we're learning or have learned, Jake's an absolute competitor and warrior, and loved how he handled that.
Is the most predictable thing in playoffs McCabe playing too many minutes?
Oh yeah.
Is it not? Because like he's,
that's what I mean.
Yeah,
add a guy to bump him down.
Yeah. But everyone, like the organization, loves him. Keith in that clip, you can hear him. He's an absolute competitor. Like they want him on the ice. But you can see his 22-minute game in the playoffs against Florida being too much.
All right, so let's open it up. off of Wednesday night, I wrote an article for the Toronto Star on Thursday, which kind of played into the consistency of the dependency on your big core four. They certainly delivered Wednesday night, but moving forward, where are your concerns going into Ottawa Saturday night?
Well, if you don't mind me taking a detour, my concerns are in net, first and foremost. Maybe we can get there after. Do you want to start on the
skaters? I'm all right. If you think that's a top priority, go there if you want.
I had someone text me during that game on Wednesday night and just say that this is like the end of the road for Samsonov. Like, it was that perilous, his tenuous, I should say, his roster spot here. And, that fourth one that goes through his glove, one goes through his armhole at one point. You say what you want. Do you feel better about him now?
No.
Puck just kept going in the net.
No.
Where's that clip from? That's so good. Yeah.
Can you play it again, Derek?
Puck just kept going in the net.
you don't need any more analysis. It just keeps going in.
There was a lot of bad Sammy Wednesday.
And he was sliding around again.
I think we had to give him credit leading up. Like, this is way outside my comfort zone of giving a goalie a lot of credit here. But he was really good leading up to the Stars game. Like, he's been legitimately good for them when they needed a guy. He came up from who knows where he was. And he's been pretty good, but the game against the Stars was.
I don't know what that means.
Like, he was a capable NHL goalie for four games.
Three,
Sammy. We're just
maybe four.
Okay, so
I'm giving him credit for those before we bury him for a bad game. Like,
no,
he was gone. He was on the moon.
This is not about giving him credit for a good two or three weeks. It's where are they going here, Sammy?
After he had. Five games of below an 850 save percentage. He had three where he's above 900. In the last three games, he's been 883, 897, 871. So he's back to that,
Yeah.
So what is the plan going into playoffs? How do you feel if he's one of the two?
I'm nervous.
And one of the one, maybe.
Nervous.
Yeah.
I'd start, first of all, by not giving him tomorrow night's game. I think based on what I saw Wednesday, I'd like him to reset again and make sure that whatever you've gained in the last month isn't lost with a bad start Saturday night.
Yeah.
I'd go to Martin Jones Saturday night and let him.
And you want Jones to keep playing too.
Keep him in the mix and allow Sammy to kind of reset again off of a fortunate win, if we can say that.
Yeah.
For him, without feeling like you're going to lose it all on a bad performance Saturday night.
Starts are going to get hard to come by. Like, if you give Martin Jones Saturday night, how far are you from Wohl coming back? Maybe a week at that point? Like, you're getting to the point where some starts are going to go to him. Like, Samsonov's window to take the crease while Wohl was hurt is just about closed. And so you're looking at a Wohl Jones pairing, unless something changes here in the next month, leading up to the deadline.
I don't necessarily think you want to. So if there's the three of them, who are you waving? I guess you're waving.
Could you carry three?
I guess you carry three because you can't. I don't think you can bet on Wohl's health.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Like, I just really don't think you'd be like, oh, he's back now from the. Shot off the sideboards where he popped his ankle and was gone for 3 months.
Think if you wave Samsonov, no one's claiming him. And if you wave Jones, someone is. He's cheap and he's...
Oh, Sammy's the guy who's getting waved if you need to. I think it's 30 days, and you have to re-wave him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's no doubt that...
If someone goes down, he's the guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to take the 3-2 off the books... Opens up
1.15 extra there.
To do a lot more come trade deadline.
Yeah.
So, listen, I'm with you, JB, that there's probably some concerns. And I'm also with you saying, like, do you really want to roll the dice on Wohl? Because you don't know. You have no idea. He can come back and be a rock star as he was in his last two or three starts before getting hurt. or he can come back and be average, mm-hmm. and or he can have ongoing issues with his high ankle sprain. Like, we don't know.
No idea.
But I will say this to both of you. It's not Brad Tree Living's top priority right now.
No.
Would you agree with that?
I agree, because you, between one of the three guys, you feel like someone should be able to play well, right? Like, it, when they're all healthy, it just feels like, I don't know, who's out there that's better that you're going to get? So I could see why you would say it's not priority. What would you say is?
When I say not a top priority, goaltending isn't his top priority. Right. It is that blue line.
And
a center of some kind, to me, would be a top priority too.
Did you guys feel, like, I thought Gio had a tough Wednesday.
It's not going in the right direction here. And you love the guy for him giving everything he's got, but it's just,
no,
there's not much left to give here.
No, Gio, you have to have that blue line at least strong enough where he goes into the first round as your seventh defenseman or eighth. He does not start in the playoffs.
Really? Yeah, I mean, you love the idea of having him in the press box as a guy who would be rested at that point, mm-hmm. could come in and give you good PK minutes and reliable play. But
so when we won the Stanley Cup, I think it was Jeff Bukaboom who had some issues. Doug Lister came in, I don't know when he came in, probably middle of the second round maybe. Okay, everybody talks about Mark Messier's guarantee and Mike Richter playing this amazing game, the night Messier guaranteed the win. Doug Lister was like this black ace with the rest of us, mm-hmm. and he went in there.
I remember him.
And he, did a phenomenal job of just coming in and holding the fort. And I don't know if it ever got as much credit as it deserved.
I'm going to say no, because I've never heard that till today. So
yeah.
No.
Same.
And can Gio do that? Can he be a guy that certainly can go in there and hold himself, you know, well?
Yeah, you're not crossing your fingers on Lagesson living up to the moment. He's been through the moment.
But it needs to come in as that type of supporting role. Mm-hmm. That's possible. Gio starting and playing 15, 16 minutes every other night, I don't like that look.
Well, then you better get someone who can PK. You know, you see some of the names people are talking about for D-man. It can't be Chychrun then. Obviously they'd love to have Chychrun, but you're looking for someone who can also help. They need some guys in their own end of the rink here.
Okay, you mentioned a centerman. So let's go to Sheldon Keefe on clip numbers 3 on the Leafs' bottom six.
Yeah, those guys contributed a lot tonight. And that's a deep team on the other side. You know, there's no easy matchups, no easy shifts against those guys. And I thought guys responded well when I put them in what I thought were some challenging spots. They managed it very well. I thought Revo again today was excellent. Holmberg was really, really good. And, that was good. You know, it allowed us to trust them in some tough spots and give a little bit of a breather to the rest of the guys. Tremendous to see.
So part of my article in the Toronto Star on Thursday, and you can grab that if you can on my ex or former Twitter account at Real Kipper, was if Sheldon coaches like he did against the Islanders, the Leafs are in big trouble. If he can find a way to get guys feeling better that aren't amongst four of the top 10 paid players in the game, then he's got a better chance here, basically.
Yeah.
And I thought the fourth line was good. And Max Domi found a way to play, I think, more than 14 minutes, 15 minutes. So he got a lot more off his bench Wednesday night than he did Monday night against the Islanders.
Yeah, I thought, and I said this in our group chat, I thought Holmberg was really good early in the game. He had a little breakaway, right? He drew a penalty, like he had a little bit of jump in his step. It makes a big difference. This team looks like a different team when you feel like you can use those guys. I agree. You know, like I've got to the point a little bit with Sheldon and this team where you know, I'm like, can they change? Can he change the way he uses his guys? And, you know, we don't see it often, right? But it is nice. Nice to see it can be different, and it worked for him on Wednesday. So
yeah. You just, I mean, how often are you going to get that from those guys? Like, you know,
right.
Reeves has been really good since he's come. I mean, really good is strong, but he's been much better than the unplayable he was at the start of the year. And like you said, they're getting a lot from Holmberg, but I guess it just depends what your aspirations are for the team. You're going to get Kampf back. You're going to get Yarncroc back, but you can't lean on these guys in the playoffs.
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, they have to add a forward if they're really serious about this thing.
An ongoing theme.
Agreed, yes.
An ongoing theme for the Toronto Maple Leafs has been even strength, 5-on-5, a lack of consistency in scoring, including out of their top guys like Tavares. The power play goes 3-for-3 under 2 minutes, which is absolutely phenomenal. But there is still a little concern on even strength goals, 5-on-5s. Let's go to Sheldon Keefe and clip 4 on Tavares and his lack of 5-on-5 scoring.
I just got to stay with it. I thought John was excellent at 5-on-5 today. I mean, that play he makes to create the Nylander goal there in the third period is, like, that's big-time stuff. So, let's not get too picky here. Like, the goals are the goals. However they go in, whoever scores them, we just need enough goals to win hockey games. And we got that here tonight.
Let's not get too picky here. So Tavares has, his last 3 games, he has 6 points, 1-2, 1-1, and a goal in 3 games ago. So he's putting it in again. I know 5-on-5, not so much still, but I don't know how you guys feel he's played. I don't know how you feel, but
I think he works his ass off.
Yeah.
I think 5-on-5 is a challenge for him right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's just a bad slump here. I think there are times when there's not a lot of room for him out there, mm-hmm. but he still finds a way to get to the net, and he's a great redirect guy.
Yeah, he's had a lot of shots. You know, he is getting pucks to the net. And didn't you say Shanny said something to your...
Maybe so.
And we'll get too into it, because I know...
Where'd you hear him?
Well... I don't know how much I should talk about this, but we're here now, so I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah.
I played in a Sportsnet Cup yesterday, which is like a big, you know, Sportsnet deal, and we went down to the Scotiabank Arena, and we played on Scotiabank Arena ice. And
which you said was awful.
The ice is just dreadful. I don't know how they ever play an NHL game on that. Yeah.
Like, you need the scrapers out there.
I was going to say, like, the pad 5 at Canlan is better than the Scotiabank Arena, which is insane to say. Anyways... He was doing like a Q&A. Sean McKenzie was there asking him questions, and then he took questions from the crowd. He was talking about Tavares, and he said that he thought Tavares was having his best year as a Leaf, and just the way that he's working and the way that he's adapted his game with the you know, his skating, how it's maybe gone downhill a little bit, but he's adjusted his game, and he went into this big, long thing about it. And it was like, that's pretty newsworthy thing from him. I mean, yeah. Just in general, we hear so little from him, and it was very... It was awesome to hear him talk about hockey. And it's just like, you never hear his opinion of the team. You never really hear from him in that. So to hear him say that, it was interesting.
I also heard that, yeah, he spoke at like an Ivy a conference as well, and said similar things where it's like, and everyone's like, really nice to get, you know, some takes out there.
Yeah.
It's funny because we hear from presidents in the league, right? Like Jim Rutherford, he'll come on our show if we call him tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and guys around the league, you don't get a lot of public Shanny comments on the team. So that's interesting.
I think there'd be a lot of Leaf fans going, hold on, didn't he score 47 in his first full year as a Leaf? So, I don't know. Is it a way of probably reinforcing his confidence in John Tavares?
Right.
I think that probably speaks louder than whether or not you really believe he's having his best year as a Leaf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do notice that since the offense had dried up the last little while, He has put more attention to detail in his game, including not turning the puck over as much. I think he went through a bad stretch where I saw him turn over the puck a lot.
Yeah.
And I think he's cleaned up a lot of that.
Yeah, he's a guy that when he's not scoring, you feel pretty comfortable in his play right now, which is good. But, it's always you weigh it against the contract. If he's just a hockey player and we didn't know the numbers, you'd say, well, obviously he's an important piece of what they're doing. So
I think if moving forward here, and again, the emphasis for me is to find a way to get Bertuzzi going yes. here.
He's the
and
one, man.
I think it has to include power play time for Bertuzzi. Mm-hmm. And I think moving forward, if Sheldon can give him a couple of starts on the power play, and for me that means that John sits.
And that's fine. John's getting his money. He can help the team out and get this guy going.
At this point, for John Tavares to go with just one more year on his deal, it really doesn't matter whether or not John scores 61 points this year, 70, 75. So for him, and the beauty of it is that even if you found a way to take him off on selected power plays and give it to Bertuzzi or give it to Domi, you know, come playoff time, John's out there, and John won't miss a beat, and he'll still redirect, or he'll find that loose area around the blue paint, and he will find a way to be dangerous.
And we're good at teasing out context now. Like, if Tavares' numbers go down because Bertuzzi is playing PP1 minutes, we'll know. Yeah. Like, he's not getting his power play points because of Bertuzzi.
Because all of a sudden you think John sucks or you've lost faith in him. It's, I have to get other people going.
So I wrote about, remember we talked about power play, the percentage of power play time that guys play on the team? So I wrote about that. That's up on sportsnet.ca. And so the Leafs guys and their big four forwards, Matthews plays 76% of their power play time on ice. Nylander 72, Marner 72, Tavares 69. What do you think Bertuzzi is? He's the next highest. So, and Tavares is 69% of the power play time.
27.
My guess is going to be 35. So.
27% of their power play time, Bertuzzi's on the ice.
Yeah.
But never out there.
I mean,
and it's always tail end that time is when they've cleared the zone, they're going back on a breakout.
When they're still in their zone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, just 2 seconds left of the power setup play. Time. This is a different type of minute. So
I thought, yeah, that conversation of putting them out there would have been really easy if they didn't score 4 power plays. Goals in their last, 7 chances?
Yeah, 3-for-3 last game.
It was leaning that way. We were having the conversations about the two units. Sheldon even alluded to it. And then the last game before the break, Tavares scored the game-winning goal on the power play, and now they've gotten hot with it.
But
it's a harder one now than it was before.
Okay, now I think it's safer to throw it over to Bertuzzi.
If there's anything I know about Sheldon, he's not going to change a thing that's winning you games because he's trying to develop something else.
But this is the thing. He needs to do some things different.
Yeah, but
I know we don't want to talk about my article ad nauseum here, but a neat thing that I just want to throw out real quick is looking at the top 5 power plays. That's Tampa, Carolina, the Rangers, the Edmonton Oilers, and the Leafs. All the top guys have similar minutes to what I just told you guys in terms of percentage that they play, except Carolina. Carolina's numbers are wild. The guy who plays the most for them is Aho, who plays 62% of the time. That's the most on their team. They have a true two-unit thing where the fifth highest guy plays 50% of the minutes. Just a totally different philosophy and a way to run your team. They're the only team that's really wildly different.
All right. And what happened today? They had an outdoor game. Everybody took the TTC.
That was yesterday.
That was yesterday?
Yeah, that was yesterday.
After All-Star Weekend, I feel like we've had enough good Leafs in the community stuff.
I cut the one clip from it, but I'll just paraphrase it. We don't have to play it. Keith's like, it's really nice to be out here. Sure would have liked the day off, but I'm happy we're here.
And we watched the video. The guys are on the subway. It's very cool. Guys are wearing the, visor helmets. Great.
I'm skating there with the alumni on Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon.
Really?
Yeah. We got a big alumni game.
Oh, wow.
At the outdoor rink.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Yeah. Allie's going to that. I'll tell her to cheer you.
No, you're going too cheer me on.
No, I'm not. I'm.
What do you
gone.
Got? Better things to do?
Yeah, I do.
Than support
literally.
Me?
I do.
Shame on you, Sammy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, buddy.
You'd like to get a day off and all that. But...
Come to think of it, I like my Saturday off.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Let's do it.
Let's do that. And when we come back, it'll be former general manager Gord Stellick of the Toronto Maple Leafs who will give us all the answers moving forward. You're watching and listening with some Stellictricity on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
fresh views on everything in the National Football League. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Let's welcome in our first guest on Off the Rails Friday. You going to drive it into the ditch, Gord, as much as Doug does at the top of the hour, or we're going to kind of build up towards Doug McLean?
Boy, I don't think anyone can drive it into the ditch. How about it's the 18-wheeler we're trying to keep on the road that Brian Burke alluded to years ago? That's going to be my visit, okay?
Well, thanks for joining us. Of course, you do a terrific job on 590 The Fan as an analyst. And your show in the mornings on Sirius Radio is terrific as well. And, of course, author of Revival, The Journey of the Toronto Maple Leafs, 77-78 series. You know Doug's going to plug his book, so you might as well take a shot at it.
Well, I didn't take a shot at it, but I said to you last week with what went on All-Star Weekend, I think a really neat tie-in is that you've got four homegrown players that were All-Stars last weekend and really performed well both on and off the ice. And you go back, this is the 1970s team, Daryl Sittler, Lanny McDonald, Tiger Williams, Boreas Salming, about four homegrown players that kind of like this team now had a great nucleus, had one great playoff series win over Justin Bourne's dad's New York Islanders, and then it just didn't quite get to the next level. So anyway, it's kind of a neat story 40 whatever number of years ago about a little bit what the contemporary Toronto Maple Leaf team is facing right now.
So given all the challenge this current team, they are facing, what do you think the realistic deadline looks like for them? Like, are they going to be able to bring back a centerman and two defensemen and a goalie? Like, what kind of haul are we looking at here for a Maple Leafs fan waiting to see some change?
I think you're going to be looking when Sportsnet does the headlines. You're going to be looking, we'll be back after a break and we'll finally get to the Toronto Maple Leafs acquisition of whomever. Door number one was Nick Foligno 1 year. Door number two was Giordano and Colin Blackwell year two. Last year, door number three and Monty's cookie jar and everything. And basically, you've gone to that well three times. You've re-upped with two of your four core players. It's not a model that's brought you success in the playoffs, a disproportionate amount of your salary cap going to top four forwards, but you're stuck. You're stuck. So you can't keep giving away futures currency. You got to let these guys lead you. And then Brad Treliving has to be going looking at the marked down section where there could be gems like Luke Shen last year for a third round pick. That's not going to grab headlines, but you get one or two of those type things that could end up being a positive for the playoffs.
So we saw a little bit of the good and bad this week between the Islanders and the Dallas game. But what did you see that you think now that they have enough to lead into a playoff push?
Kippy, I don't know. I debate, are they their best time may have been 2 years ago. The reality is, have the Florida Panthers come and gone and left them in their dust? I mean, we talked, I keep alluding to whatever it was 6 or 7 years ago, Joel Quenneville coaching the Chicago Blackhawks and saying, wow, I really see this team, a lot of similarities to when Taves and Kane came to Chicago. And here we are, one play, an exciting team, an entertaining team, a lot of personality, a lot of swagger, not a complete team, not a depth team, not a playoff successful team. I don't know.
Gord,
maybe that's
you're waving the white flag. Gord, you're waving the white flag here. You can't convince me that the Leafs are going to purposely mail it in this trade deadline with the guy. No. They're in their prime. You've got some of the highest paid players on the planet on your team in their prime. There's not a chance that they're going to mail it in this trade deadline.
Well, I don't know what the term mail it is. All I'm saying is, Kippy, 3 years of special deliveries instead of mailing it in, and you got Bo Diddley, okay? You got squat. And at some point, all I'm saying is, it's like, let's find out. Let's find, like, stop this excitement. Oh, my good, Ryan O'Reilly's coming to town. Oh, my goodness, Nick Foligno's coming to town. No, it's the guys that won the game against the Dallas Stars. It was their core players that they have to lead them. And, it's not their fault. They don't have that subsequent depth. And I'm saying that's Brad Treliving. It's and your pro scouts, be more creative, be more vigilant and make better deals to get us some supporting cast players. That's not waving the white flag.
Well, if you're looking for internal improvement, there's not too many places to find it from, but Tyler Bertuzzi certainly has more to give. How much would you play with the lines and power play time to try to give him some spark? This poor guy just can't shoot one in the net right now, and he has a history of being able to.
Yeah, you know, and also let's throw, like, Max Domi last 2 years with two different teams has had, you know, decent playoff runs. So you're hoping, you know, I'm looking at that, Justin, that in some ways they're trade deadline type players, because usually those acquisitions are veteran players on expiring contracts. Now, these guys happen to be signed in the summer, but just 1 year contracts. So they're similar to the average free agent pickup. But exactly. Those are two guys that you got to hope you get more from in the playoffs. Now, part of the problem is when you're not coasting along in first place or in a playoff spot like they were last year, you know, you still got to go out there and grind and win games and not fall back. You might be a little reluctant to do the kind of things you're talking about, but I agree. It's up to Tyler Bertuzzi to get to a next level, but also you're right. The team's got to try to get him in a place that can bring it out of him, right? It's kind of a two-way street in that regard. And to your point, like, yeah, the upside could be tremendous in the playoffs. We haven't seen it really in the regular season.
We're talking to former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Gord Stellick. So where did you have Simone Benoit and Jake McCabe as a reliable pairing on your bingo card?
Well, Benoit was not on my bingo card, okay? And I give him full marks for that. I mean, it wasn't a very good team when Babcock fell in love with Matt Hunwick. You know, you had that guy that you really hadn't heard of. And, you know, it's one thing on not a very good team. But I got to say, you know, he's accorded himself much better than I would have thought. It doesn't give you a wow name when you look at the Vegas Golden Knight D or the Florida Panther D or the Boston Bruin D, you know, as far as the depth goes. Jake McCabe was a positive addition. Again, in the playoffs, you hope can bring it to a higher level, because really last year the stories were Morgan Rielly and Luke Shen. So it's worrisome, Kipper. Like, it's worrisome when you're talking about names like that. When you do get in the playoffs, you can go with the core 4D more often. You can do that. You saw Chicago Blackhawks did it in winning 3 Stanley Cups. So your fifth and sixth D can get less ice time. But again, you know, you're trying to hide a lack of depth, and that's always worrisome.
Gord, is there a chance that TJ Brody is just not going to find it in the meaningful way compared to previous seasons? Like, he's been a guy for this team. They're just like, okay, Brody's spot, we don't have to think about. He's just a reliable, steady D. Right now, no, he's not having a great year, Gord. Where do you think he is and where he's headed?
Yeah, you know, it's a funny one, because I thought that was a really nice free agent pickup a few years ago, and there'd been like an element of consistency to his play, which, again, beyond Morgan Rielly, you've always been looking for that on the Toronto D. And, you know, I mean, Justin Hall is the ultimate, and TJ Brody had a better reputation and better career when he came to Toronto than Justin Hall did. But boy, the extremes in Justin Hall's play, was one thing, ups and downs over the year. And again, to your point, Justin, you're really hoping, you know, he can find that level for the playoffs, like something better in the playoffs. So, you know, the funny animal is we're talking about, you know, the weakness in depth and D, and we still look last year, all that scoring, and they didn't score more than 2 goals in their final 7 consecutive playoff games. So the thing is, what's the it factor that wins games? What's the difference maker? Can Tyler Bertuzzi be a difference maker in one game? Can Max Domi be a difference maker in one playoff game? Can goaltending be a difference maker in a ton of playoff games? All these kinds of things, you know, it seems to be, have always eluded them in the playoffs, whether it's from their great players or the secondary cast, the supporting cast.
Gord, earlier in the show, we were talking about Samsonov and saying Wednesday there's probably a few more signs of the bad Sammy that we've seen all season long than what we've seen in the last couple of weeks. But where's your level of concern for goaltending moving forward, or where would it be as a priority between now and the trade deadline for you?
Boy, the All-Star Sammy up to 3 weeks ago was our Sammy, Sammy McKee, wasn't it? Like, he was the story of Toronto. But sorry, McKee. Ilya has kind of – I really give him a lot of credit. I give Samsonov like about – and what they did, I thought, was sort of a modern-day smart way, not just get the hell out of here, go to the minors. More about, okay, let's get a little bit of reset. Let's work on the positives and, you know, other things. And I got to give the guy full marks how he's played of late. To answer your question, I'm probably sitting there like the Carolina Hurricanes right now. The Hurricanes a lot, it's because of injuries. But in the Leaf case, so just one of them. Can one of them play as well as the Vegas Golden Knight goaltenders did last year in the playoff? Joe Wall, even Martin Jones, Ilya Samsonov. Maybe they trade for a fourth like they did with David Riddick a couple of years ago as a backup for depth and just in case. So I felt better with Freddie every year in the playoffs, but yet Freddie was a disappointment in the playoffs. That was, you know, so you never know how things play out. So I got to say, yes, it's worrisome heading in, but if one of them can get hot and they've all shown that ability, that's all you're going to need.
Gord, do you think fans are at the point where, I hate to say this, but like taking for granted this Maple Leafs team? I'm just wondering, because at some point it could be over, right? Where this run is, okay, we're not a successful playoff team. It's, you know, there's been all these years of pushing the chips in, and now it's going to go the other direction. It just feels like the expectations have been so high. The success hasn't been there, but God, they just win. You know, like we've been all over them, I would say, for the last month or two. And, you know, they keep winning at a playoff pace. Is there sort of the risk of the fans not appreciating what they got here?
You know, it's an interesting, and I'm not plugging the book again, but you go back to that team. Now, that team, a new guy came in and just basically blew it all up and punched Imlek with that team. So you, that's why you kind of look at that era, you know, with such sentiment about it. But, you know, it's like these are amazing players. Auston Matthews is on the verge of becoming the greatest Leaf ever. Mitch Marner's a special player. John Tavares is a bit of a different case there when his contract's up. That'll be, you know, a little bit of a different way to handle it. But those three, and Morgan Rielly, who's not a Norris Trophy defenseman, but again, he's a homegrown guy. It's a likable group. It's a really likable group. I mean, All-Star Weekend showed there's something special about this group. And I know people that, you know, Justin, that go to regular season games and are thoroughly entertained, as am I, by and large. I mean, that's what's kind of it's about. You know, go out and the game against Dallas, when they had to win and the big guns had to come through, they came through. I still find that exciting to watch. I think fans still find it exciting to watch. Yeah. But again, year after year, now last year they did win a playoff series, so that was a little baby step. It's unfortunate the way they lose. It's not the fact they lose. 1993, it went down to Game 7. Doug Gilmour battling it out to the last second against Wayne Gretzky's Los Angeles Kings. I mean, going down with a fight, which it didn't really happen again against the Florida Panthers. But I'm with you, Justin, that I don't discount at all what this team's like in the regular season. This is a real special team. There's some real, maybe not special team. There's some really special, great players on this team that 20 years from now will be reminiscing about those days.
And Kip, I don't mean to like blame the fans for not appreciating them, because the fans are putting up with, you know, a lot of failure and still supporting this team. And I get all that. I'm just trying to make the point here that these are pretty darn good teams that are pretty fun, and it's been a good run here. Go ahead, Kip.
Just one more for me, Gordo, and that's the presence of a fourth line against Dallas. Reeves, JB mentioned he liked Holmberg's game. Is there still a chance over the next 30 games that they really develop a solid fourth line here?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I really do think so. And, you know, to start with Reeves, just a tough start to the season that every time you went out, that line was a minus. And it wasn't necessarily always his fault, but you just don't get going. And after the injury, a bit of a reset there. And the way Holmberg played, I think, and, you know, and probably to your point earlier, Justin mentioned about trying to put Tyler Bertuzzi in good situations. Also about getting that fourth line cemented, some stability. I mean, there's some injuries right now as far as the third and fourth line go with Yarncroke and Kampf. But yeah, that's the thing that come together. You can't go tell people to score goals. Like, you know, you want them to, but last year when they didn't score more than two goals in their last seven consecutive games in the playoffs, they know that. But you can't just say, hey, David Kampf, you got to score two goals tonight. But you can have certain expectations, a commitment like the Boston Bruins have been so great for the last number of years, to a style of play, a team style of play that hopefully can be a more conducive winning style in the playoffs. That's very much a reality.
Got anything else for him?
I think we're all good, pal.
We're good. Once again, the book's Revival.
That's and it.
Is it true after the All-Star weekend that we had to revive you?
I had.
You were on a torrid pace. A torrid pace.
I had a torrid pace for it. And one of the real fun things was I did fan forums, one-hour one with Austin Matthews and William Nylander, followed by Morgan Riley. I went to your spot right after there. So then Morgan Riley and Mitch Marner, and then I visited you guys. So that was my most fun afternoon. But anyway, it was – did you guys like the weekend?
Yeah. It was wonderful. I thought
– I loved it.
It was really good. Great to connect with some fans of the show. Great to connect with just a bunch of Leafs fans. And to be honest, you know, I thought the city showed really well. Success for the NHL.
Yeah. I just want to say, I think because it was in Toronto and it was almost as if everybody had to be on their best behavior because the crap that they try to pull in other All-Star games would never fly here
or
anywhere in Canada for that matter.
Yeah. And that's what I liked about those players were really invested on and off the ice. I mean, the organization did a great job. Anyway, it's a fun weekend. Now we move back to the real stuff.
Gordo, great stuff as always. Thanks for joining us.
See you guys.
Thanks, Gordo.
Gordo Stellick, former general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and does a great job on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, can I kind of go back at you a little bit here?
Oh, God.
Yeah. Okay. This appreciation talk, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not flying with me, bud.
What are you, coaching the team?
No, I'm just, Leaf fans are so beyond that. Mm-hmm. You're giving credit for another decent. It won't be as good as the last few regular season. Yeah. Like they should be able to, in my opinion, from here on in, like with their eyes closed, end up with 100 points.
Yeah. And okay? So that's the thing that we need to not take for granted. How many Leafs teams over the past 50 years with their eyes closed get 100 points?
I don't care.
I know.
I just don't care.
Kipper, we could be doing squids talk. We're like talking about like a team with a bunch of second liners and mid guys and have no stars. And it's like,
it's fun to watch this group.
You can't go in and lose in the first round or even the second round quietly again and look back with great fondness about these players. Mm-hmm. You want to say 20 years from now, they were really special.
Yeah.
And I'm going to turn around and say to you, these really special players, nobody got them over the hump,
mm-hmm.
right? Either you want to blame the players or you blame the decision makers above. But someone's got to take some heat if we're talking about 20 years from now that you were gifted Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares came in as a legitimate guy. And you couldn't get past the second round. How do you look back with fondness?
Well, first off, it'll be Dubas that'll eat that one.
I think they would quibble with the idea that they were gifted guys that, you know, outside of Matthews, they made selections for players. They signed Tavares away from other people.
But you sucked to get those picks.
On purpose, though, very deliberately made a decision to do that.
We could have picked those guys. We could have picked them.
Sure. But I think, you know, you know, how do Vancouver Canucks fans look back at the Sedin era? How do Ottawa Senators fans look back at the Alfredson era? I'm saying this is the risk. The risk is you look back at this era and go, God, it was fun watching those guys. We never got there.
How do we know we're in the good old days before they're gone?
That's really nice. It's very, very poetic. Yeah. I'm saying you're right. It's a matter of competitiveness. What is the expectation? You know, will you look back at this and see it as a failure or a success?
That's,
all I know is every night when you and I watch the games because we have to.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
That's why the Leafs have to get aggressive again and creative aggressiveness.
Yes.
Meaning RFAs. Go out and pull names. Multiple guys. Don't focus just on UFAs here. Yes. Move money out.
Get me GMs on the phone. We need players.
All right, we're going to get into how aggressive the Canadian teams have to be in the next hour with Doug McLean. Our thanks to Gord Stellick. Always does a terrific job on the show. Plenty more still on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. As, like I said, we're going to welcome in Doug McLean. We're going to pick up this conversation because I'm hearing it's heating up.
Ooh.
Boy.
Ooh.
Oh. Don't go away. More Real Kipper and Bourne after the break.